Thank you for joining me for this episode of The Mark of a Druid, episode 26. I do suggest you start the story at the beginning. And if you want more information about me, the author, you can go to rhondacarpenter.com or themarkofadruid.com. Now on to our story. Chapter 39, Beru's Blight. Glass shards littered the floor of the loft. Samantha stood in the wreckage, contempt smoldering behind her eyes. Her pretty face was twisted in disgust. She glared at David as he rushed down the stairs. Her hands shook with rage. Images flickered through her mind. A young man with strong, square features reached out to her. His name echoed in her memory. Davis. Tires squealed down the street. She jerked her attention back to the present. Her anger ebbed. She'd almost lost it. What had she been thinking? She scolded herself furiously. Samantha needed to remember that he was an integral part of her plan. She still needed him. Maybe this time he could actually do the job put before him. She was confident that she could smooth his apprehensions. A twinkle lit her chestnut eyes. I own him, the fool. With deliberate steps, she tiptoed through the field of shattered crystal stemware. Pain shot into her instep. Fuck! 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 She screamed. She hobbled to the stairway, then sat down. She flinched when her finger found the splinter. The long glass sliver extracted, she held it to the light. It was glazed crimson. She flicked the fragment toward the others and sucked the blood from her fingers. Now she needed a drink. Descending the stairway, she went straight to the bar. Ignoring the pain in her foot and the small stain she left on the carpeting, the martini was cold and dirty. A large, stuffed olive sank to the bottom of the glass. Samantha stretched out on the sofa, lingering over her cocktail, sipping it slowly while she contemplated. This lifetime isn't so terrible, she thought. She had money and a beautiful place to live, but she craved the prestige of the past. Condensation slid down the glass to the table, forming a damp ring. She watched the puddle grow. Since the first time she'd accidentally stumbled into the lifetime of Gormlith, wife to Aaron's only Ardry, Samantha was obsessed with revenge. There'd been many explorations into this ancient world. It was time for another. Samantha closed her eyes and imagined her chambers in the keep at Tara. In a few heartbeats, she slipped from the 21st century into what seemed to be a column of whirling gray smoke. Gormlith ran a single winsome finger across her creamy bosom, first in one direction and then the other. Seductively, she smiled at her new husband. "'Tis beautiful, Brian." He scooped her hip-length strawberry blonde hair over one bare shoulder. She sucked air through her teeth, a hiss in reverse, and tilted her head to the right. He slipped the braided gold torque around her neck, nestling the end caps on either side of the hollow at her throat. He leaned in, kissed her shoulder, and released her silky tresses, watching them cascade down her back and brush against her bare backside. Brian held a small hand mirror of polished silver for her. Her reflection, slightly distorted, sparkled with joy. Her hand glided to her neck and she adjusted the golden torque. She inspected the sparkling amethyst stones set inscribed end caps. Her fingers skimmed the intricate knot-worked carvings. Delighted, she spun to face her new husband. Flaming red hair touched with gray at his temples hung loose about his broad shoulders. She arched her neck, rising on the balls of her feet to match his height. Not many women could have, but she was exceptionally tall. She pressed her willowy frame against his solid chest and rippled abdomen. She ran her fingertips from his shoulder blade to the small of his back. Her lips grazed his, tickled by a full beard and mustaches. A husky purr rolled from her throat. He lifted her from her feet as if she weighed no more than a feather, carrying her across the room to the bed. Lavished with gifts and cradled in strong arms, Gormlaith was pleased with her bargain. He was now a means to an end. She was the Queen of Erin. The Empress, she thought. Did she love the great Beru? No, but she felt sure she could manipulate him. Sway more of his favor to her son in Duvland, Citric Silkenbeard, and her brother Melmore, the King of Leinster. But first she would please him, unlike any other woman had. Draw him in. She would bear him sons. Her fingers played on his chest, circling stiff nipples, then swept the length of his body, grazing burnished curls at thick thighs. She reveled in his stature, strong calves and a tight buttocks. She was no virgin, or he a playful lad. They took each other in the royal bed. Ravenous hands touched moist flesh, lips devoured lips, tongues brushed teeth, brushed tongues in long prowling kisses. Brian lifted her atop him, palms against his chest. She arched her back, a gasp escaped her lips. She shuddered above him. He caressed her. She groaned with pleasure. She loved that his hands were battle rough and trailed his scars with an index finger. She moaned and bit her bottom lip. When they collapsed in a sweaty heap, him now on top of her, she felt satisfaction. The marriage vows were met in the eyes of the church, and if she conceived this night, all the better. Her sons would rule all of Erin one day, and she would be the High Queen Mother. Citric Silkenbeard, her glorious firstborn, even now held Beru's daughter Emir and Duvland. And now she had Brian Beru. This was a good life. Samantha awoke, breathing heavily. A moan escaped her throat. Her hands were between her legs. A silky wetness drove a tingling sensation throughout her body. She called his name. Beru. Quivering overtook her, and her thighs clenched as the occasional jolt of pleasure throbbed through her. She sat on the edge of the sofa, drained her glass, and leaned back, drifting back off into Gormlaith's life. Gormlaith's attempts to seduce her husband dwindled into apathy soon after the birth of their son, Donched. Brian spent more time away than present. The kingdom required his constant attention. But when she heard him speak of some druidess, in terms of love, she seethed. She assembled a web of eyes and ears that quickly brought strange stories of prophecy. A pagan bitch with a bastard child could not be allowed to jeopardize her status. Within a fortnight, Gormlaith had poisoned Greditch and the so-called child of prophecy. Next, she would strengthen her son's position in Erin. She held no love for her husband, the king, and with each year that passed, she grew to hate him and his arrogant son, Murchid. The more Brian campaigned for unity of the clans, the more she schemed to undermine his dream of a united Erin. Brian disregarded every request she made of him to assist her brother Melmore, King of Leinster. As her fervor grew to obsession, Brian spent more time away from her. He made his excuses in feuding clans and unending raids. It grated on her that she was unable to control the great man. Of course, she had her playthings. The latest was a Welsh slave named Davith. The man had brought hours of pleasure and provided her an ear in places she could not openly go. "My queen," Davith said. Stringy mouse-brown hair hid square features in a nod. "You bring me tidings. Come, kneel before your queen and tell all." She smiled sweetly and smoothed her skirts. "Yes, my queen." One knee bent to the floor. He gazed up at her, his devotion plain for her to see. "A message has arrived for the Ard Righ, my queen. It is said that it is from the High Druidess of the Standing Stones." Gormlaith grew impatient, allowing her temper to flare. "The message, fool. The king is blessed with the return of his daughter." "His daughter is married to my son." "No, my queen. This is said to be the woman of prophecy." "Prophecy," she scoffed. "And where is this daughter?" she growled. Uncertainty contaminated her resolve. "I do not know, my queen." "You will make it your business to find out all. I wish to know who mothered this impostor. and where I may find the bitch who tries to take what is mine. It shall be done, my queen. And Davith, my pet. One long, slender finger tipped his stubbled chin, lifting it so their eyes could meet. You've done well. Come to me this night, and I shall reward you for your efforts. Yes, my queen. Her palm connected with his face in a full slap. And never, never, ever attend me filthy again. You are vile-smelling. Samantha moaned and turned over from belly to back. She stared at the ceiling. An insatiable desire swept over her. She wanted more of everything. More power, more satisfaction, more prestige, more physical pleasure. There was no way to be a queen in this lifetime. But she could have all that was Eve's. She could repay her for what Allian had done to Gormlith. No, to me, she thought. I am Gormlith. She rose from the sofa, snatching up the phone, glancing at the clock, and speed-dialed David's apartment. She was sure he'd not arrived home yet. Samantha's voice purred in Gaelic. She ended it with, "Who is your queen?" David sped down the street in his pale blue sports car. He was shaken. Samantha had tried to kill him. His mind raced. What exactly was it she held for him? He wasn't sure. Even in his fear and doubt, he craved her. He needed to make this right for her. He needed to show Samantha he would do anything for her. His key twisted in the lock. The apartment was dark. He clapped his hands and the lights flickered on. The keys landed in a glass bowl by the front door. He drained the orange juice container from the fridge, pushed the button on the answering machine, and listened to Samantha's voice. A sense of relief filled him. She wanted him. He did as she directed, at once lying down. He closed his eyes and thought of his queen. Davith roamed the keep, listening at the door, and spoke casually to the household maids who gossiped of the message. As night fell, he scrubbed his body in the stream. The cold water refreshed him. Invigorated and in clean clothing, he strolled to the chamber of the queen. Careful as always not to be seen, he listened at her door chamber. Upon hearing no voices, he entered, but she was not there. He sat by the hearth, awaiting her next command. The creak of the door startled him. "My queen?" "Davith, 'tis I," she said, with a slur in her speech. "Hear to me, my little slave," she commanded. He could smell the wine on her breath and knew she would be brutal, and he didn't care. Davith liked her rough touches, her sharp nails. Aye, but wasn't he pleasing the queen? And a fine fiery wench she was. He licked his lips. Chapter 40. All hell breaks loose. Beth unlocked the door to Suite 521 and punched in the code to the alarm system keypad. She and Lori rotated the schedule. She opened the clinic. Lori would lock up. Things at the clinic were a little strange, and she was sick and tired of Samantha and David jumping on her at the drop of a hat. She loved working with Lori and for Eve. James was a doll. But most of all, she thought she'd miss Lisa. She hated the idea, but Beth had made up her mind. She was going to quit. They were quite close, and Lisa was such a sweet person. "Well, maybe," she thought. "We can remain friends." Beth flipped on the lights, booted the computers, and started the coffee. She opened the storage closet and fed new VHS tapes into the machines that monitored the sessions in each therapist's office. Funny thing was, everything was out of order. Wednesday's sessions for James were missing. She made a mental note to ask Lori about it and went to the front desk. The answering machine reported only one message. She listened, intently, pen poised, ready to write. "Eve, this is Roger Montgomery. Lisa, there's been an accident." The man broke into tears. After a few seconds, he spoke softly. "Lisa is. She won't be coming in. I need to talk to you. It's important. Please call me. As soon as you get this." He left his number, and a wave of fear crashed over Beth, leaving dread in its wake. What should she do? She glanced at the appointment book and tapped her pen on Eve's column and decided to call her at home. "You've reached Eve McCormick. I'm sorry I can't take your call, but leave a message and I'll return your call as soon as humanly possible." "Eve, this is Beth. Roger Montgomery phoned and said, well, he needs you to call. I think something's wrong with Lisa. He said she wouldn't be in. I'll try you on your cell." She hung up and realized she'd not left his contact number. She cussed under her breath, then pushed speed dial 01. "This is Eve." "Hi, Beth here. Listen, Roger called and needs you to contact him right away. I think there's something wrong with Lisa. I'm 2 minutes from the office. I'll call him when I get there. Hey, what are you doing there?" "Oh, Lori called me last night and we switched. Not a problem, right?" "You know I don't care as long as the front desk is covered. I'm pulling in now. Be right up." The line went dead. Beth ran her finger down Lisa's appointment list and started calling each client to cancel the day's session. When Eve walked in the door, Beth was stunned. Eve looked haggard. "Are you all right?" Concern danced in Beth's question. "Yeah, I'm just not sleeping well. Can I have Roger's number? I hope Lisa's okay."
"It's probably just a cold."
"Here it is. I'm contacting her clients and canceling for today."
"Good," Eve smiled at her. "You're right on top of things as usual. Thanks, Beth."
She turned and walked to her office, set her things down, and pushed in the number. The phone rang several times and was answered by an older woman. "Is Roger in, please?" Eve asked, a little confused. "Just a moment, I'll get him for you," the woman replied. The next thing Eve heard was, "Hello?" "Roger, it's Eve. You wanted me to call. Is everything okay?"
"No.
No, Eve. Lisa was in an accident last night. Oh, shit. I should just say this." Roger's distress was evident in his tenor.
"Say what, Roger?"
"Roger, say what?"
Lisa passed away last night."
Eve dropped the phone. It hit with a thud of plastic against carpet. She snatched it from the floor.
"Oh, God, no. How?"
"A fucking gangbanger shot her. She was on her way to your house. The car swerved off the road. She's dead." His voice quavered, sorrow tainted with anger.
Roger, I
wondered why she never showed. I just thought she didn't want to deal with the James thing. I don't know what to say. I'm so sorry."
"No, she was on the way to your place when the shooting happened. Did you know she was pregnant? We were going to be parents." He broke into tears.
"Oh, Roger, I'm so sorry. What can I do? Anything at all. I'll clear my calendar. I'll come over. Stay right there.
The family's here. You don't need to come."
"But could you do something for Lisa?"
"She respected you." His voice trailed off.
"Anything at all."
"Will you give her eulogy?"
"Of course."
"When?"
"She wanted to be cremated. I just want to have a small service at her favorite spot on the beach. I haven't decided when. We're talking about it now. Her parents are here and my mother. I don't, he sobbed. "Can I let you know?" His words sputtered out.
"Yes, of course, Roger." Tears streaked her face, but she was oblivious.
Beth assembled patient files and readied the mid-month paperwork that required Eve's signature. She set the folder on the counter, just as Samantha huffed into the clinic, nose in the air.
"Morning, Miss Page."
Beth's greeting was tinged with dislike, but she smiled anyway.
"Beth?"
Samantha lifted her chin and placed her bag on top of the counter.
"Print my schedule for the day," she ordered.
"Yes, I will right now." Beth turned to the computer. The printer in the back of the area whirled into action. She rose and took the papers from it, added the client files to Samantha's caseload.
"Here you go."
Samantha snagged the sheets of paper and files from Beth's hand.
"I'll be in my office."
She scooped up her bag and the folder that lay beneath it in a single action. Beth didn't even notice the mid-month folder was gone. Eve left her office and walked crying to the front desk.
"Beth, Lisa was killed last night."
Beth fell into the chair while Eve explained what Roger had said. Samantha listened at her doorway.
"Dead? That makes it all so easy. Now I don't even need to wait for Lisa to quit."
Samantha moved to her desk and dropped her bag on the floor. A quizzical look crossed her face. The folder of mid-month papers Eve was supposed to be signing lay in front of her.
Her smile was instantaneous and evil. Samantha's mind raced. If she had Eve's signature releasing the project and all the findings to her, there would be no need to rush publication of the data or seek funding from other sources. She could have the project and the acclaim. Then Eve could die, as she had, so long ago, with nothing. She turned on the computer. Eve and Beth were in the front office. Samantha could hear them babbling about the twit's death. She quickly typed, creating a release giving her the project, all its past and future findings, and all rights to sole publication. Then she added the right of first discovery. With Eve distracted, she wouldn't even read what she was signing. James's signature wouldn't be a problem, and David's would be even easier. She printed the document and slipped it in the center of the folder and paper-clipped it to a document above it. Then she moved the red sign here sticker on the line to the page she'd typed. She sauntered to the front desk, donning her most concerned look. She laid the folder on the countertop and asked, "What's wrong?" Eve and Beth turned, startled. They hadn't even seen her approach. Eve started to relate the tragic events. Inside, Samantha vibrated with excitement, but pretended to listen intently. The phone rang, but Eve waved Beth off. "Let the service get it." James stood outside David's apartment building. He buzzed, but there was no answer. Frustrated, he clutched the cassette he'd taken from Lori's in his hand. James felt sure he was onto something. Maybe confronting David wasn't the right thing to do. He went back to his car. He had no idea how to prove what he was thinking. But if the tapes were causing past life experiences, he had to prove it. How was the question? Lori lifted the receiver and called the clinic. She needed to speak with Eve. Lori had to convince Eve that James didn't sexually harass a client. The service picked up. Lori was astonished. Beth was supposed to have opened. She threw on a skirt and blouse and drove to the office. Eve sat behind her desk in a fog. She wanted to call Andrea, but things were funny between them. Her schedule was in front of her. She had an hour before her first client, and she couldn't cancel with him. He was coming all the way from Wales for this. She could get through one client, she thought. Beth was busy clearing the rest of Eve's afternoon. Samantha was going to see all her clients. Eve couldn't understand how she would be able to stay so calm. It seemed that Lisa's death was nothing to Samantha. Beth stepped into her office. Her eyes were red and puffy, but she composed herself enough to stop crying. "Eve, here are some things for your signature. None of it's terribly important." "I'll get it before I leave," Eve said, with no emotion in her voice. "You may want to get the mascara from under your eyes. You look like you have a black eye." Eve's hand touched her cheek. "Oh, yes, thank you." She went to the ladies' room. As she washed her face, Eve cried for Lisa and for Roger. She could see Lisa's smile. They'd gone to school together. Her friend was gone. After drying her face, she took several deep breaths and reminded herself she was a professional. She could handle this. It was only one client. She returned to the office. Beth was coming back from showing a client to Samantha's office. Eve sent Beth for a long break. Eve's black eye was obvious now that her makeup was gone. She told herself she didn't care. If anyone said anything, she'd simply blow it off. Say it was an accident. The phone rang. "PLR Trials, may I help you?" "Eve McCormick, please, this is Patricia Powers." "Hello, Patricia, this is Eve." "Wonderful. Listen, I'm having a little dinner party day after tomorrow. I think there'll be some people there you'll want to meet. Things are a little crazy here. I won't take no for an answer. You said you were always looking for funding. I promise you, you won't be disappointed. Is the email address on your card accurate?" "Yes, but..." "Good. I'll email the directions. Oh, and it's a formal dinner." "But Patricia, you don't understand." "Eve, I understand you need funding. And this guest list includes several millionaires. Come, you'll have a captive audience, I promise." "I'll do my best." "Great, I'll send the directions. Thank you for thinking of me. Goodbye," Eve stammered. "See you there." Eve hung up the phone. Lori rushed through the office door with a frantic expression on her face. Eve, I need to talk to you. Lori, I need to talk to you, too. Beth will be back any minute, and we can go in my office. Right on cue, the door opened, and Beth walked in. She held a tissue to the corner of her eye. Beth, will you take the front desk while I talk to Lori? Eve asked.
I've got it, Eve. I'm fine, she sniffed.
Come on, Lori. Eve took her arm, and they walked down the hall. Lori felt a trail of grief flow from Eve to her. What was going on? She searched her environment. When they broached Lisa Montgomery's office, Lori stopped. Eve, she's gone? Come in, Lori. Tears welled in Eve's eyes once more as she hugged Lori. She was shot by a drive-by. No words escaped Lori for what seemed minutes. A tear trickled down her cheek, followed by another. What do you need me to do? She asked. You could help Beth. We need to shuffle her clients. Samantha knows, but James and David haven't been told yet. She glanced at the clock. I have a client that I can't cancel. Whatever you need. Lori hesitated. Did someone hit you? No, I slipped in the shower. Eve made an excuse. I'll call a florist and have something sent over to Roger. She pulled a tissue from the box at the edge of the desk. It's hard to believe she's gone. Lori dabbed at her nose. I know, Eve said. What did you want to talk to me about? It can wait. Lori looked at the engagement ring on her finger. The phone rang. Eve picked it up. Okay, I'll be right out. She hung up. My client is here. Look at me, I'm a mess. Here, blow your nose. I'll slip into the back so he doesn't think we're a bunch of blubbering females. Eve straightened her jacket, wiped her nose, and took several deep breaths. She centered her mind and walked to the reception area, her eyes downcast. She held out her hand in greeting. Mr. Sanders. He took it. Something passed between them. Their eyes met. A rush of images expanded and then contracted in her mind. Eve fainted. Ryerson caught her before she hit the ground. Beth raced from the other side of the counter with a yelp. Lori came from the back at the sound. When she reached Eve's side, she cried out, Call 911. I think she's only fainted. Give her a moment. Her pulse is steady. Ryerson's voice was rock solid. He held her wrist lightly. Lori looked into golden eyes. Her swift intake of breath caught him off guard. The old crone from his dreams flashed into his mind. Ryerson was first to break the gaze. He lifted Eve from the floor and carried her to the sofa. Her lashes fluttered. A moan escaped her lips. She looked into his eyes. Her lips parted. Adam! Her head lulled. He cradled her in his arms. He never wanted to let her go, but he didn't understand the feeling. He simply knew she belonged to him. Put her here, said Lori. I'll get some water. She trotted down the hall. Beth answered the phone. A rushed conversation ensued. Ryerson heard none of it. He was spellbound. His fingers lingered in Eve's hairline, then caressed the yellow bruise at her cheek. It dug at his soul. Who had hit her? He watched her chest rise and fall. Her breathing was even. She looked like she was sleeping. Andrea McMurray is on her way. She said she was close and had a feeling something was wrong, one of the girls said to the other as she entered the room. Okay, let's see if we can bring her around. Wet paper towels dripped on the floor as she walked to Eve's side. Do you mind? Lori asked Ryerson. Ryerson was jarred by her tone. Yes, by all means. He backed away. It felt like he was abandoning her. He watched from a few feet away. Andrea dashed through the doorway, took one look at Ryerson, and stumbled. She lost her balance and fell, her head barely missing the coffee table. Ryerson helped her to her feet. Are you all right? His accent was thick. I am. Andrea tore her eyes from his. There was an instantaneous thought that she was losing her mind. He guided her to Eve's side. Lori was patting Eve's face. She stirred. Her eyes opened, but she didn't look like she was focusing. Andrea hovered over Eve, but caught the stranger's movement out of the corner of her eye. Ryerson turned to Beth and said, Miss, I should reschedule. It seems Miss McCormick is unwell. This has been a very difficult day for all of us, Beth said softly. I'll take your number and have her call you when she's feeling better. Beth jotted down his hotel and cell numbers.
Ryerson excused himself and left. David drove his car into the underground garage of the clinic building. He had to talk to Samantha. He needed her. No, he ached for her touch. I'd like to take this opportunity to really quickly ask all of my listeners to please go leave a comment, rate the book. If you like what you're hearing, or even if you don't like what you're hearing, please let me know. Your comments help me and others choose what to listen to. If you want more information about myself or the book, please go to themarkofadruid.com. And until next time, take care.